Hey, and welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. We've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. Tonight, I am joined by Nick Gonzalez from Hoosier Huddle. Look, Indiana is doing so good right now. I was like, man, I have to get one of these Hoosiers on this show talking about Indiana, Kirk Cignetti. So we're actually going to preview the Maryland-Indiana game again, get some of Nick's thoughts. He covers the team over at HoosierHuddle.com, so you can go check out his work there. Nick, how does it feel to have an Indiana football team that is just rocking right now? I mean, 1-0 in the Big Ten, it's crazy. How are things feeling in Bloomington?
It's feeling great. I mean, I'm excited. Ever since I was a freshman, we've kind of been pretty bad. So it's been exciting to have actually a good football team and something to look forward to. And then it's been really fun covering it. It's been very exciting in the games. We're still trying to look for more fans in our stands because, but, and then this weather this weekend's probably not going to help that much. But I really hope that we get some more fans coming in for Maryland and then especially after Northwestern because that's an away game. But I hope we get some more fans that come in.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I actually, I have to admit, I'm a part of the problem. I had the opportunity to go to the Western Illinois game, and I didn't have anybody go with me, and so I was like, you know what, I'm not just gonna go to the game by myself. I don't have anybody go with me, so I'm just gonna stay home and watch it on TV. Lo and behold, they break records and everything that game. So I should have gone, even if it was just me sitting by myself. So Nick, you obviously you cover the team for Hoosier Huddle. Do you go to every game? Are you in the press box? You on the sidelines? Or like, what's it normally look like when you're covering the team?
I try to go to every game. So I wasn't at the Western Illinois game because I was up in Ann Arbor for the Texas versus Michigan game, which
Oh,
was
sweet.
amazing because I grew up a Texas fan. My dad went to college there. So it was a great win for us. And
Yeah.
then I didn't go to UCLA because it would be too hard on my schedule. It's a little too far. But I've been to FIU and I went to last week's game against Charlotte, and I get to watch it in the press box, which is really nice in the beginning of the season because it gets so hot on the field. But yeah, and then I go to all the press conferences for Cignetti, and I go to the player interviews too, and it's really great just like getting their insights.
Have you had a chance to ask Kirk Cignetti a question yet?
Not during this, like during the season. When I was at Big Ten Media Day, I asked a couple questions, but yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we'll get more to Indiana here soon. It looks like the chat's not too full yet, but I'm sure they'll be coming in and they'll be rocking it with us, going back and forth. So for now, we will just stick on schedule. Nick, our very first topic is good old-fashioned Bear Alexander. The USC defensive tackle has decided to redshirt for the 2024 season due to dissatisfaction with his playing time, preserving his eligibility for two more seasons. Alexander will remain with the team and practice with the aim of becoming a full-time starter and leader on defense, according to Tony Jones, who is close to him. USC head coach Lincoln Riley acknowledged Alexander's decision, calling it surprising, but emphasized his confidence in the current defensive line and its depth. This move aligns with a growing trend in the NCAA transfer portal era, allowing players to strategically preserve eligibility while assessing their future options. The most notable case of this was Matthew Soloka, however you pronounce his name, and then the running back of UNLV also did that as well. Nick, I just want to get your thoughts on this. Like, what's your general thoughts on Bear Alexander? Obviously, this comes after the UNLV situation, so it's a little crazy, but I mean, just what's your thoughts overall on this situation?
I mean, it's hard to like say if it's going to be a good decision or a bad decision because yes, I do think it's a little selfish because football is unpredictable. You don't know if someone's going to get injured. You may start later in the season if you decided to continue playing this season. But I think it's also a good decision for him because if he believes that he's starter material, then he either should stay with USC next season and be a starter there or take his talent elsewhere because it's so easy to do that with the transfer portal nowadays. But I think bringing in the two other defensive tackle transfers, Gavin Meyer and Nate Clifton, I think that raise the competition for him, and it just kind of it ended up not looking as good as he thought it was going to be this season with them. So I think he just wants a more even playing field. But you never know if USC is going to end up bringing in more D tackles next season.
Very true, very true. Doug Shepherd, senior, he says this is getting out of control. Starter material in the MAC, maybe. Well, last year, I don't think this is too hot of a take. I think last year he was the best player on defense. Now, the defense was pretty bad last year, so that's not really saying all that much. However, you know, I think coming off a year where you're the best player on the defense, and then from there you go to third most snaps on the defensive tackle position right now for USC, so not starting, not getting as many snaps as he did last year. I attribute that more to Dan Lynn knowing that you have to rotate your defensive line. That was one of the things for USC last year that I felt like got overlooked, was how little Alex Grinch rotated his defensive line at times. And now maybe it was because he didn't feel like he had the guys, but I've heard some people say like he won't be missed. I feel like he will, you know. I mean, I know that, you know, if he is like a selfish player or something like that, some players might be glad he's not playing. But at the end of the day, like, your defensive line, I'm right there with you, Nick. If somebody gets hurt, that's just one more guy that's down. So does he decide to come back? I have no idea. The depth is critical, though, on defensive line, and Bear definitely helps with that, whether he's a starter or not, whether he's getting the most snaps or not. He definitely helps with that. I'll be honest, I would not be surprised to see Bear return, because we saw this same thing happen with the transfer portal, right? He wanted to go and enter the transfer portal, and then they talked him back into staying. Now, there's some rumors about NIL and stuff like that happened there. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I've seen Bear's dad online, like, going at it with fans and stuff on Twitter. It's like, you just need to ignore the fans at the end of the day. Just play your game and do what you need to do for your team. And unfortunately, it feels like he is focusing more on the fans and what's best for him rather than what's best for the team. And yes, Doug, I completely agree. He has the coolest name for a defensive tackle ever. It reminds me of when Ohio State had Tuff Borland and he was a linebacker. It's like, yeah, Tuff is the best name possible for a linebacker. So, Nick, a lot of people are saying college football is broken. There's a lot of things that are – I mean, Doug was just saying it. Things are out of control right now. I mean, do you agree, like, is college football broken? And if so, what do you feel like can be done to kind of help this specific issue that's going on, where players are redshirting or quitting on their team 4 games in, so that way they still preserve their year of eligibility?
I mean, I do think it's somewhat broken. I mean, there's some Indiana players I just heard about today that are going to redshirt. They're not like super big in the defense, but it does take out some depth out of our linebacker position if anyone goes down, like Walker or
Fisher.
Yeah, Fisher. Sorry, yeah. I was reading. But I do think it's somewhat broken. I mean, you talked about the UNLV quarterback, Matthew Sluka. I mean, it's just a hard thing to handle, especially with all this NIL stuff. I think that ruling ended up opening a can of worms that they can't close, because there's going to be athletes that just think they deserve more. They deserve more playing time. They deserve more money. So, and if the program they're in doesn't offer it, then they're just going to use the transfer portal to go somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. And they're going to quit on their team early. I mean, I think everybody knew that the transfer portal would be a possibility for people to go elsewhere at the end of the season. But I don't think anybody thought, well, maybe some people did, but not the majority of people did not think about players playing 4 games and deciding, you know, oh, I don't like how much I'm playing, so I'm going to sit out the rest of the season. I think Matthew Saluka's case is a little bit of a different example. I know everybody kind of has a different stance here, but the way I look at it, if you get promised NIL money and you don't get paid it, you know, that's not really fair to me. So I get sitting out for that. But this situation where it's just playing time, like, he still has more eligibility after this. It's not like he's completely done. So it's definitely a weird situation to think about, and that's unfolding in front of our eyes. This kind of leads us into our next conversation, Nick, which is that the SEC and Big Ten officials are meeting on college football playoff format, the house case, and a scheduling agreement. And some people are wondering if this could possibly help with situations like this, with what's going on with Bear Alexander. The Big Ten and SEC officials are meeting to discuss scheduling agreement, the future of the college football playoff format, and new enforcement and government models. And so obviously that's one of the things they're thinking. Hey, would a new governance for college football be able to help? The NCAA is doing nothing right now. They have no guidelines. There is nothing in place to actually help with NIL, players, you know, not playing, stuff like that. Discussions will explore a regular season partnership and overhauling the postseason, potentially replacing existing bowl arrangements to generate more revenue. That's the R word that everybody likes to hear, right? Revenue. The SEC and the Big Ten hold decision-making power over future college football playoff formats, with debates on expanding the playoff to 12 or 14 teams, balancing automatic qualifier and at-large spots. Plans include a third-party enforcement model for revenue sharing agreements and exploring a governance structure that may further subdivide Division I. So I know you've been kind of thinking about this, Nick. I sent this to you earlier today, but I mean, in your opinion, could this joint partnership between the Big Ten and the SEC, I mean, there's already been rumors about this before, but then meeting once more just further kind of brings this along. Could a joint partnership by the Big Ten and SEC resolve some of the problems in college football today, like NIL, scheduling, the college football playoff format, all those kind of things? What's your thoughts?
I don't know if it will resolve any of the problems, but I do think it will be a beneficial partnership for both conferences. I mean, with scheduling, just seeing how many viewers were watching the Texas versus Michigan game. I think it was like 19
it was like
million.
9 million or something like that.
Yeah. And then I was at that game. It was an outstanding experience. I just think like having more SEC and Big Ten matchups will be beneficial. Like just seeing like maybe Ohio State versus Georgia would be a great matchup in the future. So I think the scheduling can improve and make more, they'll end up making more revenue opportunities for both conferences. And then with NIL, I think it's really hard to fix right now unless they get like the NCAA is probably not going to do anything. So if they get some new governing ordinance, like you're saying, then maybe they can regulate it more. But I think it's a very hard thing to regulate. These universities were profiting off these athletes for years without them getting any money. So I do think they deserve some compensation, but I do agree that it is kind of getting out of control.
I totally agree. They need compensation. It's just, how do they get that compensation and how is it regulated in such a way that you don't have players quitting and you don't have players getting paid, right? I mean, things have to be done in order for things, you know, the players to be done right and for the schools to be done right by the players. There has to be a mutual working together relationship here. And I feel like you with the NCAA, they're not going to do that. They're not going to put those things in place. They're not going to fight for this because at this point they just put their hands up in the air and said, we can't do anything. Well, let's get some people in here who can do something, right? Let's get the Big Ten and the SEC to come together and say, look, every single athlete that plays in the Big Ten and the SEC is going to be under contract. Now, what that contract looks like, that can be up to the school or up to the NIL collective or whoever it is. Like, you know, you sign a contract to play for Indiana for 2 years and then you can enter the transfer portal after that. I don't know, you know, something like that, or, you know, you're promised this much money if you start X number of games or something like that. Like, I know it makes it more like NFL football and more like the professionals, but at this point, they're already professionals to me. They're getting paid money and they're doing sponsorship deals and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like, they're already getting paid. So why not just make it more enforceable, right? Have some more rules around it, because newsflash, the payment's not going away. They're not getting rid of NIL. You giving up NIL, it's there now. So you're not getting rid of it. Nick, in the article that Ross Dellinger put out, there were three topics mentioned. Are you most interested in the Big Ten and the SEC completing? Like, which of those three topics that was mentioned, are you most interested in the Big Ten and the SEC completing? Again, they were scheduling, They were a new enforcement and governance of the NCAA and then the college football playoff format. If you had to choose, which one of those three would be most important to you for them to figure something out with and get it done?
I don't know. I feel like scheduling would be, I really want that done because I'm a Texas fan. I grew up a Texas fan, so I would love to see Texas playing Big Ten schools. It would be really nice, especially like, I mean, I feel like they would whoop Indiana, even though Indiana's doing good right now, but it would be exciting to see like my two schools just battle each other out. And then I feel like there's so many good opportunities for really entertaining football games if they can schedule the two conferences to play each other, like just a couple games and before they start conference play.
I agree. Yeah, scheduling would be awesome. I mean, right now you kind of have like an ACC SEC challenge going on in college football. I know that's going on in college basketball, but you kind of have that going on a little bit because of all the rivalries you have shared between the SEC and the ACC, which is unfortunate because I do think, yeah, I mean, for us as Big Ten fans, pretty much all of our rivalries are in the conference, so we're not really too worried about it, other than like Notre Dame and Michigan. I don't even know if Michigan still considers Notre Dame a rival or not, but like USC and Notre Dame are rivals, and so at this point maybe just Notre Dame should join the conference, right? just come on in. But I tend to agree. I think that the playoff, or not the playoff, the scheduling format of getting playoff worthy games in the season would be the best thing, because seeing these games on college campuses and not in like pro stadiums, like that's one of the biggest draws, right? To see this actually happen, to see the students on campus, to see the alumni in the stands, all that different stuff. I just think that's a huge part of it. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people watch the Texas and Michigan game, because they wanted to see the crowd. They wanted to see the environment. You know, it's not this stale professional environment where it's a neutral field. It's, you know, on a campus and the SEC team coming up north and playing a Big Ten team. So I agree. I want to see more of that, and whatever we can do to get that, that would be great. Let's look at a few comments really fast, Nick, and then we're going to get to a commercial and we're getting to some of our previews. Dylan says, man, I thought Guggenheim grew hair overnight for a second. No, that's not Zach. That's Nick. They do both end with CK. But no, that's Nick, not Zach. That's funny, Dylan. Phillip says, contracts with buyouts. Okay, yeah, that would totally work. Yeah, have a buyout so that way you can move on from a player, or the player can move on or something like that. That's a good idea. And then Doug says, there should be a pay system set up to pay during their college years, divide between salaries and annuities to protect the kids from being taken advantage of. Yeah, I definitely think there needs to be some stuff put in place to make sure the kids aren't taken advantage of. To me right now, the biggest thing are the agents and like the fake agents that are like your third uncle, right? Who it's the first time you've ever met him, and now he's like wheeling and dealing all your deals for you in college, and he's making 50% of what you make, which, you know, is just kind of crazy to me. But I definitely think there should be something in place. Like, that was the biggest thing to me that the NCAA just completely dropped the ball on. I get there's a lot of like government stuff right now they can't do, but like, they should have been like, look, the only agents that you're allowed to work with are regulated agents by the NCAA that we approve, which I get some people don't like that, but there's too many college kids being taken advantage of. Do you have any thoughts on that, Nick?
Yeah, I do think there should be a more of a system and requirements for their agents, because there are a lot of kids being taken advantage of, and I hate to see it. It's sad to see them. They're so talented, and then just end up losing money because of agencies or contracts.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Doug says, you're nailing it, JR. I appreciate it, Doug. I appreciate that, man. You had a great comment there. I appreciate that. All right, everybody. We are going to talk some football now. We got the other stuff out of the way. We're going to talk some football now. We're going to talk Nebraska and Purdue. Dylan, make sure you stick around so you hear about Purdue. We're going to talk to Nebraska and Purdue here after the commercial break. Stay with us. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, you know, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minutes to Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis, making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description. MinutesToSports.com. You won't be sorry. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, want to remind you, please do like and subscribe. We would appreciate you doing that. Like the video. It helps with the algorithm, people seeing it, all that kind of stuff. And we really appreciate you helping us out with that. All right, Nick, let's talk some Nebraska Purdue. Nebraska is 3-1, 0-1 in the Big Ten after that big Illinois game, and they visit Purdue, who is 1-2 on Saturday, with both teams looking to bounce back from losses last week. The teams are tied 6-6 in their series history, making the game a tiebreaker for both bragging rights and a critical Big Ten win. Nebraska will rely on star freshman quarterback Dylan Raiola, who has thrown for 967 yards and 8 touchdowns this season, while Purdue counters with their experienced senior QB Hudson Card. Purdue's ground game, led by Devin Mockaby, 168 yards versus Oregon State, poses a challenge to Nebraska's defense. Nick, what's just some of your general thoughts going into this game? Both these teams coming in, what do you think?
Well, as someone who covers Indiana, I don't see Purdue doing that well. But I like seeing what Nebraska, some of the things Nebraska had to offer while playing against Illinois. Illinois really surprised me in that game, but and Nebraska is one of the teams I worry about Indiana losing to as the season goes on. But I think Dylan Raiola, he looks really good. I mean, he's the freshman. He's rolling right now. And I just think they need a work on their run game a little bit more. I feel like they're not focusing on that enough. And then for Purdue, as a former Texas player, Hudson Card, I don't think he's cut out for it. He's struggling a lot. But their run game has looked really good. Mockaby has been doing, like last week, he did really well. So I think if Purdue can start with the run game early on and be able to succeed, then Purdue might have a chance in winning.
Yeah, I think you make good assessments there. I think it's interesting. Nebraska hasn't leaned on their run game as much recently. I mean, I wouldn't say the run game has been bad, but they've definitely been relying on Dylan Raiola more, which he's a true freshman quarterback that just seems like, you know, and they have 4 very viable running backs for them to choose from. I mean, they have Dowdell, Grant, a number of other guys who are Big Ten starting caliber running backs in my mind, and you have all those guys in the backfield, you would think you'd be rotating those guys more. But against Illinois, they really only went with Dowdell. They didn't really go with anybody else, which I thought was interesting for me. And then I think you're right, Purdue is struggling right now, and it's tough because they started that game against Indiana State. Hudson Card set a record for completion percentage with over 20 passes. They looked really, really promising. And then you play Notre Dame 2 weeks later and you get blown out. You can't stop the run. And then you play Oregon State this last week. That makes 2 years in a row that you've lost to a G5 school. I know Oregon State was just Power 4 last year or Power 5 last year, however you want to put it. So that is a little bit different. But still, that's 2 years in a row losing an out-of-conference game to a non-P4 school. You know, that's not great for Ryan Walters. That's not great for the program. And so you have to start questioning some things about what is going on here. So I guess I'll just start with that for my key to the game. I'll start with Purdue, and then Nick, we'll get your thought on Purdue. My key to the game for Purdue in this one is Hudson Card has got to put together a competent game passing the ball. The last 2 weeks, he's been under 125 yards passing in both games. Game one, he was 96% completion percentage against Indiana State. FCS team, not a good team, but 96% completion percentage. The last 2 games combined, 44%. That is not going to get it done, and I know some of that is also the offensive line, the receivers. It's not all on Hudson Card, and so when I'm saying he needs to have a competent passing game, I'm also talking about the entire team overall. But, I mean, these last two games, he's been sacked four times. He's thrown three interceptions, and he only has two touchdown passes. It's just not been enough, and you're not going to be able to win if you don't have a competent passing game, if your passing game is turning the ball over more than they score themselves. Nick, what's your key to the game for Purdue in this one?
Yeah, I think you really hit the nail on the head right there. I think Hutchin Card really needs to develop the passing game more. He needs to succeed more. He hasn't been showing it at all, but he has the ability if the whole team works together, because he does need the offensive line to help out. And then I also think the key to the game is just feed Mockaby. Like, if you can just run the ball successfully, then they're going to be looking for run, and then you could sneak in a pass and they might not be expecting it. And then maybe Hutchin Card will have a little more success.
Yep, be able to use the passing game after you dominate with the run game a little bit. I like it. All right, I'll let you go first with Nebraska. That way I don't steal yours. What's a key to the game for Nebraska in your mind?
I think Dylan Raiola has to just start off going strong. I think he's a talented passer. If he can make plays, Purdue's not going to be able to stop them. And then also if they – because Ramir Johnson has not shown much as of late. I think Dowdle is very like stepping up in that role as their running back. So I think if they can feed Dowdle some, he could give them some good gains, some good first downs. But I think it's going to be up to Raiola to help carry the Cornhuskers to the win.
Yeah, I agree. Ramir Johnson needs to step up a little bit more, but at the same time, he's playing for snaps right now, and right now they're going with Dowdell more than anybody else, it seems like. And so, if he wants the snaps and he wants to step up, he's got to make it happen. I kind of have two, and they're both a little minor. I think at the end of the day, Nebraska, if they play as a competent team, that's overall their key goal. But if I had to give kind of two things, one would be I want to see all four running backs in this game. I want to see them rotating all four running backs, see who the best guy is, and see who you can trust in the big moments, right? I think Dowdell has been their guy. And I'm not saying he's not the guy, but this is a game where Purdue has a struggling run defense. You should be able to run on them. And if you keep all four of those guys, their legs fresh, they should be able to get in there and have big runs. And then I think the other piece of it too is Nebraska can't have those penalties on the defensive line that they had against Illinois. You've got to clean that up. To me, that was a bigger factor on why they lost than Dylan Raiola making some of the mistakes he made, was giving away free yards, giving away free points in those situations. So, I think that's going to be a big thing for them. Nick, I promised that I would have a must-watch reason for these games, and my must-watch reason for this Nebraska-Purdue game is, can Nebraska bounce back and take care of a struggling team? This is what teams do who are good and who are real about being good. It's that they come back, they don't let the loss get to them, and they take care of business against a struggling team. It's what Notre Dame did. It's what Alabama did after they struggled against USF. They obviously didn't lose that game. They blew them out in the end, but they took care of business against the team they were obviously more talented than, that they are obviously better than. And I think at the end of the day, Nebraska is a better team than Purdue, and they need to take care of business in this one. Do you have a must-watch reason for this one, Nick?
I think the must-watch is just see Purdue get stomped.
You're speaking to your Indiana fans. I like it. All right, let's get to some comments really fast, and then we'll do score predictions. Phillips, giving his score prediction, says Nebraska rolls Purdue 45-14. That's what I'm talking about. That's what Nebraska needs to do. Sean says Illinois likes to run the 3-4 backs to keep fresh. Yep. And that worked for him in that game. Totally worked for him. Sunshine Design, Big Red will roll. They better. I think they will too. And then Sean Schrock, my guy, is here. Hey, Sean. Nice to see you. Appreciate you being here, man. All right, score predictions, Nick. I'll go first on this one, and then I'll let you go first on the next one. My score prediction, that way you don't look like the Indiana homer when you pick them to when you pick Purdue to lose. My score prediction in this one is I think Nebraska is going to roll in this one 31-17. I'm not quite as confident in some of the points as Phillip is, but I do think that at the end of the day, they're going to run the heck out of the ball, and they're going to have a number of big plays in this one. And I think when you're running the ball, it's just going to bleed the clock some more, so they're not going to have as much time to be able to get to 45. But if they get some defensive touchdowns or something like that, I could totally see that happening. But for now, I'm just going to predict 31-17 with the possibility of it being more than 31 as a, you know, as a pretty likely possibility. So, Nick, what's your score prediction?
I think it's going to be 31-10 Nebraska. I think Purdue's still going to have to struggle a lot. I don't think this is going to be their bounce back game. I mean, maybe next week, but I think Nebraska is going to bounce back. They're going to show their dominance, show why they deserve to stay ranked. And I think they're going to win by at least 21 points.
All right. Yeah, we're actually pretty close there. I like that. I like that. All right, Purdue, prove us wrong, Purdue. Prove us wrong. All right, let's get to the big, big game here. Minnesota at Michigan. Number 12 Michigan will look to continue its powerful rushing attack after piling up 290 yards on the ground against USC. Backup running back Khalil Mullins led the charge with 159 yards and two touchdowns and may be competing for the lead back role. Spoiler, he should be the lead running back. QB Alex Orji made his first career start, focusing more on the run than the pass. With just 32 passing yards, he had 43 rushing yards after allowing Iowa's Caleb Johnson to rush for 206 yards and three touchdowns. Ouch! Minnesota faces a tough challenge against Michigan's dominant ground game. The Gophers will rely heavily on QB Max Brosmer and running back Darius Taylor to spark their offense and try to end Michigan's dominance, as the Wolverines have won 26 of their last 28 meetings. Nick, what are your thoughts going into this game?
I think Michigan's run game just looks so good. They had Khalil Mullins, they have Donovan Edwards, and then Orji didn't show much of it, but he has the ability to break off the run. I just think the pass game really struggled this season. I mean, she just looked not good in the passing game, and H. Warren also was looking pretty terrible the games prior to Orji started. So I think it's going to be difficult for Michigan to continue passing. I don't think their quarterback should that. They have to rely on their run a lot. And then Minnesota, I think they're going to have to try to fortify their run defense, because if they don't, then Michigan's just going to run all over them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Minnesota, they looked good with two shutouts back-to-back. Now, that was against Rhode Island and Nevada, so, you know, not exactly the most potent offenses in the world. But still, I always say, I give credit for a shutout no matter what. It's hard to shut out just about any team out there. So back-to-back shutouts, I was giving credit there. But, I mean, that defense just fell apart to Iowa's running attack and Michigan. I mean, a lot of people are mocking Michigan's lack of passing, which, don't get me wrong, Alex Orji did not look good passing the ball. I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't mock Michigan for their passing. It was not impressive, but the offense, when I rewatched the game, they were pretty creative. I mean, they really made USC try to defend the entire field. You know, sometimes last year you kind of saw it was just Blake Corum going up the middle, especially in that Penn State game. It was basically just Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards going up the middle. But, I mean, they were running some read option with some wide receiver sweeps. They were also taking Alex Orji to the edge and making them defend the entire part there. And that was one of the things USC had their biggest issues with, was when they would over pursue on those boundary runs. And so when they're going to the boundary, USC is just over pursuing, and Khalil Mullins, Donovan Edwards, whoever it was, they just put their foot in the ground and then they went up and they were getting 8, 10, sometimes 15 yards on a single run. So, you know, my key to the game for Minnesota is they need to be good in the run game on defense. They need to make sure they're not over pursuing, that they're taking advantage of when the running backs are going to the outside. And they also need to take advantage of Michigan's poor secondary. One of the reasons why that defense looked so good was because of Michigan's defensive line. If their defensive line is not getting pressure and Max Brosmer has time back there, he's going to be able to pick this Michigan secondary apart, as long as you don't throw at Will Johnson. That is like my number one key. Don't throw near Will Johnson. I want every play for Max Brosmer to say, there's where Will Johnson is, point him out and say, I'm not going to throw it over there, because you throw near Will Johnson, and at this point, two out of the four games, he has a pick six, so you can't do that. So you got to stay away from Will Johnson, in my mind, and they have to try and find a way to keep Max Brosmer safe. I mean, he's back there. He's not a very mobile QB. He's going to be just fresh meat for this Michigan defensive line to go after. Minnesota's going to have to figure something out with their offensive line. But I do like their offensive line better than USC's, so I think they have a chance. Nick, do you have a key to the game for Minnesota?
Yeah, I think they just they like you said, they need to rely on Brosmer. I mean, he looks good, and then I noticed when I went to the Texas Michigan game that just their secondary does not look nearly as good as their front seven. So if they can find a weakness in that, if they can end up succeeding, they don't need to rely on the run game if they're able to pass the ball safely.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what's your key for Michigan here in this one, Nick? I'll let you go first on the Michigan key.
I mean, I don't see them improving their pass game as much, so I just got to say, keep running the ball, keep running it well, have some trick plays or some ways to confuse the defense. And then also Michigan, they have to work on their pass defense some, because their run defense has looked great. But if they can't stop Brosmer from passing the ball, then they'll lose.
I agree. That was like my main key for Michigan as well, is just stick with the running game and don't get cute, right? don't get cute with it. Stick with the run game. It worked eventually for Iowa, even if, you know, Michigan is tied or they're down in the first half because they're not able to move the ball. Just stick with it, because look what happened when Iowa just kept running the ball in the second half against Minnesota. Caleb Johnson ran wild for over 200 yards. And also on defense, they got to stop blitzing. You have got to stop blitzing and just trust your defensive line. You don't have the guys in the back end to be able to blitz as much as Wink Martindale does. Listen to this. The first three games, Wink Martindale blitzed over 40% of the time. Over 40% of the time they were blitzing. And then in game four, they blitzed 26.79% of the time. And I think that paid off a lot. And when you saw those big pass plays, those touchdowns, Michigan was blitzing. So if Wink Martindale wants the secret to, using this defense the right way, it's let the defensive line work, because at the end of the day, the defensive line is, that's the best part of this defense, and you just got to trust they can do it on their own. They don't need help. So my main reason that Minnesota versus Michigan is a much-watched game in week five is actually, I'm really interested to see what happens with this passing game, because word is out of practice that Michigan has been playing two QBs in practice. It's actually been a 60-40 split for them between Alex Orji and Davis Warren. So if Davis Warren is still getting 40% of the snaps in practice, that leads me to believe that they think Davis Warren might play at some point. Now, is that just because they're thinking if we get down and at the end of the game we put Davis Warren in? Maybe, who knows, but there might be a 2QB system coming for Michigan this week against Minnesota. And if that happens, I want to make sure I'm there to see it. Nick, do you have a must-watch reason for this game?
I would just say the run game for Michigan has just looked so exciting. It's just been so stellar. So just to watch it, to see Mullings and Edwards just dominate Minnesota would be very interesting.
Totally agree. All right, let's go to a couple comments really fast, then we'll do our score predictions. There we go. There's Steely Matt. JR, yo, bro. What's up, Steely? My guy. Appreciate you being here, man. And Sean is here. He says there are three Seans in here. Got a lot of Seans in the chat right now. I like that. Sean says Minnesota needs to play the Bear defense. That's interesting. I think they do as well, and that was the interesting thing that Michigan was doing in the game against USC was actually going with a bear front at times as well, but when they went with that bear front multiple times, that's when they started moving the ball to the outside more, and guys were over pursuing and there weren't as many on the outside. So I don't disagree, Sean, they do need to be in that bear defense in order to stop the run, but they also got to make sure those guys on the outside are ready to tackle as well, because you get Khalil Mullins out there, you get Donovan Edwards or Alex Orji out there, they're a load to bring down. Those guys are big and strong, and getting your cornerback to bring them down, that's going to be quite the feat for them to do. All right, a couple more. Doug says, I saw that Michigan was employing six offensive linemen, two tight ends on multiple occasions. Yes, yeah, they were, and that was another thing they were doing to help that box. They had seven or eight guys in the box sometime when they were doing that, and then they were running the ball to the outside, or they were throwing a screen pass to the outside. It was pretty creative stuff by Michigan in that game, I'm not gonna lie. You know, I don't like to give Michigan a lot of credit, but when I see it, I gotta give it to them. And War Room says USC should take care of Wisconsin at the Coliseum. You're right, War Room. They should. We're going to talk about that game last, so stick around, and we'll talk about USC Wisconsin. All right, Nick, score predictions. I'll go first here. That way, you know, you can go first with the next one with Indiana. So my score prediction here is 27-17. I think Michigan wins this one. I think the Gophers keep it close to start the game. I wouldn't be surprised if this is like a tied game, 10-10 or something like that after the first half. But I think eventually Michigan's running game just comes out on top, and we could see a little bit of a repeat last game with Iowa and Minnesota, where Michigan just kind of runs all over the place in the second half and they kind of figure out Minnesota's offense. What's your score prediction, Nick?
My original score prediction was going to be 35-17 Michigan, but after thinking about it more, I'm thinking more like 24-17. I think Minnesota will keep it close. Michigan's just going to have to adapt, and they probably won't be down much of the game, but I do think they're going to have some struggles against Minnesota.
All right. All right. Hey, as a Buckeye fan, I love to hear that. All right. We're going to hit a commercial really fast, and then we're going to talk about Indiana and Maryland. So stay with us as we go and learn about the College Huddle. The Big Ten Huddle is brought to you by the College Huddle, the largest fan-led college sports podcast community on the internet. With contributors from 70 different schools, you will get in all kinds of analysis from all over the country. Go visit thecollegehuddle.com to find your team and read articles from all across so many fans and contributors. The College Huddle is fan-made, fan-driven, and fan-fueled. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, I want to remind you, go check out the Ohio State Voice of College Football. That's where I make my Ohio State content. And then you can also check out Nick over on the Hoosier Huddle. Listen, Indiana's pretty good this season, so if you want to learn more about Indiana and how they're making it happen, go read Nick's work over there and check him out. All right, Nick, this game, Indiana-Maryland. Indiana's 4-0. They're chasing their first 5-0 start since 1967 under first-year head coach Kirk Cignetti, but faces its toughest test yet against the Maryland Terrapins. Despite being undefeated, Indiana's early opponents have been less challenging, with their notable win against UCLA that was 42-13. Maryland is 3-1, bounced back from a close loss to Michigan State with back-to-back wins, and is seen as Indiana's toughest challenge so far. Maryland's standout wide receiver Ty Felton, a Heisman contender, some people are saying, has been a dominant force with 157 receiving yards per game, and Billy Edwards has completed 75% of their passes. It's been a fantastic duo for Maryland this season. Nick, I'm going to let you do a lot of the heavy lifting here. I gave most of my work with the preview on Tuesday night, but I'd love to hear what you think. What's your thoughts on this game?
Okay, well, during the offseason, I wrote a preview article about the Indiana-Maryland matchup, but I like Felton. He just looks really good. And I was not expecting Billy Edwards Jr. to be starting. Like, I know he's been there for a while, but I thought transfer MJ Morris would be the starter because he did have some success at NC State. So I did think he looked more fit to start in that role. But Billy Edwards Jr. has looked great so far. It does look like it will be a tough opponent for Indiana, but Indiana has the most points Indiana has allowed so far was against Charlotte when they scored 14. And then I think if their DBs can stop Felton and then all those other like Prather and then all their other talented wide receivers, I think Indiana has a good chance because Hemby's good, but Indiana's defensive line and linebackers have looked stellar lately. So I do think Indiana has a good edge in this game.
I agree. The box for Indiana has been way better. They're 7 in the box, specifically the defensive line. I think Aiden Fisher is a fantastic linebacker, but specifically that defensive line has looked fantastic. Now, they have not played the best competition in the world. However, I also think that one of Maryland's weaknesses is the trenches. I don't think their offensive line is very good, and I think their defensive line leaves some things to be desired as well. So I think for Maryland, this is just like a tough matchup. I think that Indiana has a solid secondary. I wouldn't say it's like one of the best secondaries out there, but I think it's a solid secondary. And so for me, their biggest thing is going to be limiting these big plays, right? I mean, Maryland lives off the big play. And so if Indiana can disrupt the quarterback and disrupt his timing and keep those big plays off the board, I think that's going to be a huge, huge thing for him. Tell me what worries you the most with Maryland in this game and their keys to the game to win? Is it Ty Felton? Is it Billy Edwards Jr.? Is it the turnovers they produce on defense? What's kind of like your key for Maryland to win that worries you the most, Nick?
I think it's Felton, because I do think, because Mikhail Kamara does a great job. He's always pressuring the QB. I think he has some of the most pressures in at least the Big Ten, but possibly in all of college football right now. He's been looking really good. So I do think he's going to pressure Billy Edwards a lot, but I think Felton's going to be a big problem. I mean, we have D'Angelo Pons at corner. He's been doing a great job, but I do think it will be kind of tough facing them. So I do worry about the Hoosiers in their DB situation, but there's also a lot of good on their defense, like Amari Farrell, who's their safety, who's playing Rover right now. He's looked great in the past few games this season. He didn't play much as a freshman, but this is sophomore season. He's been doing really amazing. Aiden Fisher and Jalen Walker have looked great too. And I do not worry that much about Maryland's defensive turnovers, because we have still not turned the ball over yet. So I do believe
one of the only teams in college football. It's like you and Georgia, and that's it.
Yeah, I do believe that Indiana has a good chance. I think their offense will roll. I mean, that's what's been so big in these games. They've just been getting the defense have been helping them get opportunities, especially in UCLA. We get the ball first, we score, and then we get the fumble recovery, and then we score again. So if the offense can stay rolling, it's going to be hard for Maryland to keep up.
Yeah, that was a good call out by you about Kamara. He has 15 pressures on the season, which is second most in the Big Ten, only behind Derek Harmon, and he's actually tied with Josiah Stewart from Michigan. I think most of those pressures came in this last game. I have to look that up for sure, but yeah, he had a lot of pressures last game. But yeah, no, Kamara's been fantastic. He's been one of the best defensive linemen in the Big Ten so far this season with the way he's playing, and you just can't say enough good things about him. Maryland is going to have to figure out a way to get Billy Edwards, you know, rolling out or on the move or something, because this Maryland front is not going to be able to block Indiana. Thankfully for them, Billy is mobile. I mean, he's a quick guy. He can run, but they're going to have to figure out some creative things to do with that, so that way they can get him away from this defensive line for Indiana. All right, Nick, obviously you're the Hoosier fan. You know, you're rooting for him in this one, but, you know, there's got to be another kind of must-watch reason in this game other than being a Hoosier fan. To you, what's the reason for the must-watch in this one?
To see if Curtis Rourke can continue to throw the ball, air it out, and look really good, because he has been doing really well lately. He had some struggles against FIU in the first game, but I do think it was just the whole team just adjusting. But the Hoosiers have been looking so good. I mean, what their toughest opponent probably is UCLA so far, and they haven't looked the best. But I do think Indiana has a good edge on Maryland. Another must-watch for this game, I have to say, is the run game. I mean, we run like 3 to 4 backs. We have Lawton. We have Ellison, we have Kalon Black, and then Elijah Green doesn't get much time, but he has a touchdown in every single one of the games this season so far, so I'm hoping he keeps up that streak.
Yeah, Ellison is one crazy back, man. I love watching Ellison play. I think he's the highest rated back in PFF for the Big Ten that I saw so far this season. So, yeah, I think for me the biggest reason to watch is just to see if Kirk Cignetti can keep making history. You know, I mean, since 1967, they've never been 5-0. He just was the first coach to ever start 4-0 at Indiana in their entire history. Like, man, I think there are so many storylines about Kirk Cignetti and what he's doing with this team right now. It's kind of crazy what he's been able to do. And if he can keep winning, I mean, he's definitely going to be the coach of the year in the Big Ten this season. I mean, even if he just gets to like 6-0 or something like that, you got to give it to him at that point. So, yeah, it's crazy what Indiana's doing this season. And I love it for the Hoosiers and for Kirk Cignetti. So, all right, let's get to a few comments really fast and then we'll get to our score predictions, Nick. We got Sean Schrock. He says, Indiana looks legit. Congrats. Hoosiers fans deserve it. Very good. Appreciate that. Ryan says, I'm going for Maryland to beat Indiana. Underdog is the Terrapins. Interesting. All right, going with Maryland. And Philip is doing that as well. He says, the plus 7, the spread is too big. He's going to pick Maryland 32-31. All right. Interesting choice. Interesting choice. He says Maryland lost a solid solid MSU team that's well coached and has talent. MSU gave a very well coached and solid BC team a game. Maryland definitely more battle tested and had the athletes and lines to match up with Indiana. All right. I would question the lines a little bit. I think that Indiana has better lines personally in my mind, but I respect that opinion, Sean. And Doug says Big Ten football is fantastic. No other conference plays for the Floyd of Rosedale. There we go. There we go. Floyd of Rosedale. Last one, Steely Matt. Who's your dude? Hello. I love that. There we go. All right, score predictions in this one. Nick, I'll let you go first. Score prediction.
I don't want it to sound too outrageous, but Indiana is like a super good offense. They've just been so high scoring. They're one of the highest scoring offenses in all of college football right now. I mean, they haven't played the best opponents, but no matter what, when the ball is in their hands, they're going and they're putting up points. So I think that it's going to be around 33-21. I do think Maryland does get some points. They get the most points that Indiana defense has seen. But if Indiana's defense can control the amount of big plays that happen, especially in the second quarter, I mean, 31 out of the 37 points scored against them have been in the second quarter. So if they could control that, then they will succeed and they will have a good win.
All right. I agree. I'm going to pick Indiana in this one. I'm actually going to have them under 30, though. I'm going to have it 27-17. I do think that there's a good possibility Curtis Rourke might throw an interception or two in something in this game, but I think that he's a seasoned enough quarterback that if he does throw an interception or he gets a strip sack fumble or something like that, I think you're going to see Curtis Rourke come right back and drive the team down the field and put some points on the board. That's my prediction. If Curtis Rourke turns the ball over the very next drive, he will come out on the field and put some points on the board. I really believe in Curtis Rourke. He had a fantastic career at Ohio, and now he's just dealing here at Indiana. So I believe in him, and I think at the end of the day, Maryland, they have some really good playmakers, but I think Ty Felton's going to get his, but I don't know if anybody else is going to get theirs. It's probably just going to be the Ty Felton show on offense, and that's going to be about it. So, few more comments and then we'll get to a commercial. Steely Matt says, "Hey, Nick Gonzalez." There we go. We got the name for you there. So he's saying hey to you, Nick. There we go.
Hey.
Sean's prediction, 42-13, Indiana. That would be in line with how much they've been scoring lately. All right. All right. Doug says, "I like how Nick has his hair covering his eyes, but doesn't do the head flips so many do as spastic. That's funny. That's funny. Love fans who are passionate about their teams, except for Michigan, of course. We understand, Matt. We understand. And Hoosiers are cool people. There we go. There we go. We appreciate everybody. We're going to do one more game, and then we'll be done. So we're going to do a commercial break, talk about some home field, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about USC, Wisconsin. Home Field is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Home Field brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Home Field digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we appreciate everybody being here, J.R. and Nick Gonzalez. Hey, do us a favor, go check us out over on Twitter at the Big Ten Huddle, putting out graphics and stats every single day for you, asking questions, trying to get involved, and posting clips every now and then of the show as well. So go check us out, the Big Ten Huddle over on Twitter. We'd appreciate if you follow us there and interact with our content. So, all right, Nick, last game to preview, and it's a doozy. USC and Wisconsin. Wisconsin is going out west to see USC. Number 13 USC is 2-1, 0-1 in the Big Ten, and looks to bounce back from a 27-24 loss to Michigan as they host Wisconsin, who is also 2-1 in their second Big Ten matchup. USC's offensive line struggled against Michigan, allowing 4 sacks and managing just 96 rushing yards, raising concerns ahead of the Wisconsin game. Wisconsin, coming off a bye week, will start backup quarterback Braden Locke after losing starter Tyler Van Dyke to a season-ending ACL injury in their 42-10 loss to Alabama. The USC tight end Lake McCree will also be out with a lower body injury. Lincoln Riley estimated he won't be back for another 3 to 4 weeks, USC will face Wisconsin team playing in Los Angeles for the first time since 1966, and the Badgers defense previously dominated the Trojans in a 2015 Holiday Bowl win. I'm not going to take too much from the Holiday Bowl, but I did think we had to mention the last matchup there. So, Nick, what's some of your thoughts going into this game?
Well, I grew up a Texas fan, so Lincoln Riley, since he was previously at Oklahoma, not a huge fan, but I do think he has done a really good job with USC, especially with bringing over Caleb Williams from Oklahoma to USC. And then I still think they look a lot better than I thought they would this season. But I think Woody Marks has been doing really good in the run game. And then I think Miller Moss has been doing good passing the ball. And they looked really good against LSU. And another team that was doing all right against LSU was UCLA, at least for the first half. So I do think Indiana should get some more credit for beating UCLA that badly. But I think USC, they look really good. I haven't watched much of Wisconsin this season, but what I've seen from the Alabama game, Alabama's a good opponent, but it's very tough for them.
They were overmatched. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. I think that there are some weaknesses for USC that are some weaknesses for Wisconsin as well, but I think Wisconsin has the players to overcome those weaknesses, and I think USC has the coaching to overcome those weaknesses. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in this one. Going to the keys of the game, for me, USC, their main key to the game is to keep Miller Moss safe. Keep Miller Moss off the turf. Keep him safe. Give him time back there to deal and to throw the ball. The O-line, they were too slow and they were too weak against Michigan. But I have to be honest, something I noticed during the game is it wasn't all the offensive line's fault. I did feel like Miller Moss needed to do better at shifting the protection, because there were times when Michigan would bring five guys, and I mean, you always have five guys blocking on the offensive line, and there would be one guy that was just running free. And so obviously there was not communication either from Miller Moss or the center trying to figure out, hey, you have that guy, you have that guy, you have that guy. You saw guys double teaming and pass protection, which is not the worst thing in the world if you have four guys coming on the blitz, or four guys coming, but when you're blitzing that fifth guy to come, you have to be able to get, you know, one guy on each guy, and they weren't doing that at times. And so you saw on a five-man pressure just one guy coming free to Miller Moss, and that makes it really, really hard when the other team has six guys in the back end and five guys pressuring you with one guy just completely free. So the Wisconsin D-line, I think they are worse than Michigan. Obviously, they've been struggling this season, but even a bad D-line can get pressure if the offensive line is not working together, if they're not shifting, and the quarterback is not calling out what they need to do. So that's going to be a really interesting thing for me to watch in this game. Is Miller Moss shifting his offensive line, getting the right protections? Nick, what's your key for USC?
I think, yeah, they need to protect Miller Moss because they love to air the ball out. I mean, I looked it up. They've aired the ball like around 129 times in their three games and have only rushed like 72 times. But they love to air it out. They love the pass. So I just think if they can protect Miller Moss and keep him making successful passes, then they'll succeed.
I totally agree. That's going to be one of the main keys for Wisconsin. What's your key for Wisconsin there, Nick?
To stop Miller Moss, to make sure to pressure him, find some weaknesses on the offensive line and be able to pressure them, because Michigan was able to do it last week. So if they can succeed in doing that, then Wisconsin has an actual fair chance of playing well against them.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Wisconsin, like I said, you know, they don't have the defensive line of Michigan, obviously. But when you look at how Michigan was able to get some pressure, even when the defensive line was getting blocked, there definitely is the opportunity for that. For me, for Wisconsin, it's for them. They need to win the time of possession and run the ball, right? I mean, the running backs have not been great this season. They need to step up in this game. But to me, early and often, you need to give the ball to Ches Malusi. Have him wear down this defensive line of USC. And if USC doesn't have Bear Alexander playing, that's one less player they have on the defensive line for depth. Wear down this defensive line as fast as you can. And I actually felt like the O-line did a pretty good job against Alabama. Now, to Alabama. They dominated, but I think at the end of the day, if you look at their past two games and what happened there, felt like they played better, which is pretty crazy considering the talent difference between Western Michigan and South Dakota versus Alabama. And so for me, you have to use this run game in order to open up the play action for Locke as well in a struggling wide receiver room. The strength of this USC team is their secondary. So if Wisconsin wants any success throwing the ball, they are going to have to be successful on the ground, have the line of, or have the time of possession. And in the second half, I think that's when you go to Cade Yasemel. I think they call him Yak, and have him carry the ball because he's the more explosive runner between him and Chesmalusi. Listen to the stat, Nick. This is crazy. Chesmalusi has 26 more carries than Yak on the season. 26 more carries. But Yak has two more runs of 10 yards or more. That's pretty crazy. Yeah. So to me, like, you have to be giving the ball to Yak late in the game after Chesmalusi has wore this USC defense down. You have to give it to Yak and figure that out. The USC linebackers, they were good against Michigan, but there were times when they were just outside their gaps. And so USC's strength to me is that secondary. You have to go away and minimize the secondary, and you have to figure out a way to help Braden Locke throw the ball. Because if you just have Braden Locke step back and throw, I don't think it's going to work out very well for you. So, Nick, what's your must watch reason for this game?
I think Wisconsin keeps it close, so potential bounce back game from Wisconsin. I think that's my must watch, because Wisconsin has the chance to upset USC. So if they can do that, then yeah,
they definitely have the chance. And for me, it kind of goes along with that a little bit. It's, you know, USC, they kind of had that introduction to running the football against them, right? They had the team that runs the ball the best, or, you know, one of the best in the Big Ten, and they struggled to stop it. And so for me, it's kind of like USC redemption game. The key to the game is for Wisconsin to run the ball. Can USC stop Wisconsin from running the ball? Can they give themselves that reputation of, like, yeah, Wisconsin only had like 3 yards per carry against us. You know, maybe Michigan did a good job, but, you know, they have to set that tone. For if you are a Big Ten team, don't just think you're going to go up against USC and run the ball all over USC, because it ain't going to happen, because we have Dan Lynn now. We're stronger. We're better in the run game. We're better at tackling, which, you know, I kind of dogged USC for their tackling, but, I mean, their tackling wasn't all that bad throughout the game. It was really just in the fourth quarter where they struggled the most in tackling. So as long as they can tackle throughout the entire game, you know, they should be better, but we'll see. We'll see. All right, let's do a few comments really fast, Nick, and then we'll get to score predictions. Doug says, I like JR and Mike after the games on the Voice of College Football. I appreciate that, Doug. Yeah, me and Mike give a lot of effort there, so we appreciate you. And Barb says, thumbs up. Appreciate that, Barb. Thanks for being here. And Sean says, he's with me. He says, Wisconsin needs to run the ball and get pressure on Moss. Could not agree more, Sean. That's one of their keys. And here we go, Doug, one more time. If it was whiskey of old, they would run all over USC. I agree, Doug. That's kind of the crazy thing. If it was Wisconsin of old, they would do that. But under Luke Fickell, it's been changed a little bit. So we're going to see if they can do that in this one. So, all right, Nick, should I give my score prediction first?
Sure, if you want to.
All right, I made you go first with Indiana, so I'll go first this time. All right, so I feel like I can't just pick the favorite in every single game. So I'm going to make it a little interesting. I'm actually going to pick Wisconsin in this one. I'm going to pick Wisconsin to win 20-17. And I'm kind of going out on a limb here a little bit that Wisconsin will fix their running game and their running backs will show out. I think you have a great opportunity here with Chesmalusi and Yak. I think, like, in my mind, if Luke Fickell plays this the right way, Wisconsin should win this game. But if Luke Fickell tries to get too cute, if, you know, Phil Longo tries to pass the ball and doesn't use the running game to set it up, I think Wisconsin or USC is going to really take care of him. But if they play this game the right way, if they're smart, they win the time of possession, doing that kind of stuff, I think Wisconsin should win this game. But, you know, USC is also at home. USC is also hungry after that loss to Michigan. So I don't really feel great either way of this here, but I'm going to go with Luke Fickell, bet on him. I did that at the beginning of the season. It's not worked out so well for me, but I'm going to do it one more time, and maybe I'll learn my lesson after this. Nick, what's your pick?
I think it's going to be a close game. I'm thinking USC 24, Wisconsin 21. I think Wisconsin will get something going in the run game and will be able to run over USC just like Michigan did. But I do think USC is going to clutch it in the end and end up winning the game.
All right. We'll see which one of us is right, Nick. But I do agree. I think it's going to be lower scoring than some people think. I think this USC team, they're really going to have to be able to score the ball when they have opportunities, because I think Wisconsin's going to try to keep it out of that offense's hands. So interesting pick there. All right, Nick. I think we put in a good day's work here. We had a few more comments. Sorry, guys. I want to make sure I get to those. Doug says, wow, whiskey over the Trojans. Gutsy take, JR. It's a gutsy take. It might be a stupid take. We'll see. If it is, I'll come back here Saturday night for the Power Ranking Show and let you all know how stupid it was. Don't worry. And then Barb, Ohio State fan, says, gotta love our guy Fick. Go Wisconsin. Yep, Fickle. Former Ohio State coach and Ohio State player back in the 90s as well. So, yep, Ohio State fans love him. Love him. So, all right, Nick, that's all we got, man. I really appreciate you being here. Thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge about the Big Ten and especially those Indiana Hoosiers. You do anything special for the game on Saturday?
I might try to go to a tailgate before the game, but if it's raining, it might be a little tough. But
yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to be at the game. I'm excited to write about it. And it's going to be a good game. And well, it was really fun coming here.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Are you going to be in the press box again?
Yeah.
How's the food at the Indiana games in the press box? Is it good?
It's repetitive. I mean, it's been chicken tenders the whole time. But last week, they brought in some mac and cheese for the first time. So they're doing a little bit different, but I'm getting a little tired of the chicken tenders.
Are you going to more Big Ten venues throughout the season, or are you going to pretty much stay in Indiana?
Yeah, I plan on going to Northwestern next weekend and then to the Michigan State game. And then depending on my plans during that, because it's the first week of Thanksgiving break, I would really love to go to the Ohio State game.
For sure. Well, tell you what, we'll have you on again at some point, and you can compare all the press box food for us. Tell us who in the Big Ten has the best press box food. How's that sound?
Okay, yeah, sounds good.
I love it. All right, thanks for being here, Nick. You want to tell anybody anything about Hoosier Huddle, where they can find it at, anything like that before we get out of here?
Yeah, you could find it at HoosierHuddle.com on any site you search on. And then I'm pretty sure it's Hoosier_Huddle on
Twitter. Yeah.
Twitter, but I'm not exactly sure. I don't pay attention exactly to it, but yeah.
Yeah. You'll catch Nick in the press box eating the chicken tenders. There we go. All right. Thanks for watching, everybody. We appreciate it. Thanks for being here, Nick. Have a good one and enjoy the games this Saturday. Join us again on Saturday night. We're probably Sunday morning, actually, for the Power Ranking Show. And if you don't stay up until after the Oregon-UCLA game, it's all good. I get it. Watch the show the next morning. We appreciate it, everybody. Have a good one.